Welcome back to Stuff We've Seen. This is Jim. And now, here he is, the man you've been waiting for and waiting for, Teelbert Pupkin. Everybody, Teelbert Pupkin.
Oh, I like the little king of comedy you snuck in there.
Yeah, well, you see, I think I did that same joke in one of our earliest recordings.
And I think you did.
Since it's kind of like, is this a reboot? I don't know, because
this is the, this is a reboot.
Yeah, we're, reboot.
Or it could just be a new season.
We'll call it a new season, because I was absolutely 100% convinced when I got on the mic to tell our faithful listeners that this was the end of Stuff We've Seen. And this would be kind of like the second time that we were closing shop. And this was really it. I mean, it was it, right? And now I feel like Sean Connery, when he said he would never play Bond again, we should never say never again.
Never say never again, Connery. He taught us all a lesson there, although part of the lesson was that sometimes the reboot is not all that great.
That's right.
So I'm hoping that's not an indicator for how our reboot, that's maybe it's another season, not a reboot, because that was one of the first real reboots in like movie franchise history.
Yeah, and it confused the hell out of me as a kid because I was like, I remember earlier that summer, I had Octopussy with Roger Moore. And then I'm like, wait, I'm getting another Bond movie? This is amazing. In the same year? Awesome. And Sean Connery, my favorite of the Bonds, is going to be.
Yeah.
And I was so excited. My dad was. So, of course, we went opening weekend. And I'm watching this stinker. And I'm like, even me, you know, I'm like figuring out, I'm like, this is so weird. There's none of the James Bond music.
Yeah.
There's like different money pennies. There's different everything going on here. Where's the cue? And this is basically the same movie as Thunderball.
Yes. Yeah. It's basically, yeah. Well, it is.
And I didn't know that at the time why I was like, you know, I thought I was like the most clever guy in the world going, they just ripped off Thunderball. And I didn't realize that the whole thing was that they had no rights to James Bond, except that they owned the rights to Thunderball.
Yes.
And so they could use James Bond's name, but they couldn't use any of the sort of character, the branding characteristics from the other movie. But they could use his name as long as the story was basically Thunderball.
Exactly. So it's basically a remake of Thunderball with an aging Connery and the Sharper Image catalog. I don't know if you remember this, but I used to get the Sharper Image catalog in the 80s.
Well, I remember the store.
Yeah, well, the catalog was something to behold because every time a Bond film came out, they had an entire Bond issue of the Sharper Image with, like, here's his watch and his sunglasses. And
so you could buy a version?
Yes, exactly.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and so I was kind of obsessed with that as a kid, like going through the Sharper Image catalog and imagining myself as James Bond.
That's so great.
I was a bit of a James Bond obsessive as a kid.
I had never heard of James Bond, and yet when I was a kid, I remember going to the drive-ins and seeing like trailers for The Spy Who Loved Me.
Oh, yeah.
And there's that guy with the jaws, and I just thought, wow, there's some crazy action movie. And I didn't see it. Then came 1979 Moonraker?
Yes.
My parents, I we're going all over the place, and I have a cold, so I apologize for my voice.
We've totally derailed our show.
now we have to finish where we're on. So it's 1979. I was a huge fan, as you know, of American Graffiti.
Yes.
Well, they had a sneak preview at the theater for more American Graffiti.
Right.
And I don't know where my sister was. I don't think she was with us. She must have been off with like some friends or something. I don't know. But my mom and dad, they loved American Graffiti. They wanted to see it. They took me to see the sneak preview of More American Graffiti, which I loved at the time. And it's not very good, but I loved it then.
But at the time, yeah, absolutely.
And afterwards, the movie that it was with was Moonraker that was still playing. And so my parents were like, oh, yeah, we'll probably love this. It's a spy thing. So that was my first taste of James Bond.
Oh, okay.
And when it was over, I was like, I love this James Bond guy. And it wasn't too long afterwards that I saw some of the other James Bonds were on TV, like, you know, like Live and Let Die and stuff like that. And so the Harvard Square movie theater used to be a single house, and it would just show, you know, repertory films, you know.
Yeah.
And they did double features all the time, and they were continuous. So you could just walk in whenever and catch whatever was playing, and you could stay all day and watch the movies over and over again if you wanted to. And they were playing Goldfinger and Thunderball.
Great double feature.
And my dad loved Sean Connery. He loved him. There were movies that we went and saw at the drive-in that had Sean Connery in it, who I didn't know who he was at the time, that my mom got my dad to go to those movies because Sean Connery was in them, like The Great Train Robbery. So he was telling me all about all this Bond. Well, after that double feature, I felt like there is no other Bond. That's right. The Bond. I thought I liked this Roger Moore guy, but now I understand. So I, like you, was obsessed. I mean, you know, when the new ones came out, you know, I think my sister and I went and saw For Your Eyes Only.
I read all the books.
And I've never read any of the books.
I read all the books.
So you're better at it than me. You're more, I guess, of an obsessive, because you had the catalog and the books.
I had the catalog and the books, but I didn't have the same access to movies. Well, as soon as we could rent stuff, my dad also loved Sean Connery. So when video rentals came in, I definitely saw every Bond film then.
The funny thing is, right, if we really break it down, none of them are, except for a couple, none of them are really that good.
No. They're fun. They're entertaining. They're oftentimes kind of goofy. Yeah, they're not all that great. There are some good ones along the way, and there's been some decent ones recently.
Now, did you happen? Because look, we talked about this offline. Did you happen to rewatch Never Say Never Again?
Just part of it.
I couldn't get through any more than like a half an hour. It's so terrible.
It was so bad. I couldn't get,
Did you get to the part where Barbara Carrera drives alongside the guy that they've, like, you know, shot up with heroin and throws the snake in the car?
Yeah. Who comes up with this stuff?
It was so bad. And boy, you know, talk about things not aging well. Sean Connery's innuendo one-liners are just, they're just so cringeworthy.
They're so cringy, yeah.
They're terrible.
Yeah. And
I mean, it's bad.
Yeah, so that movie's basically unwatchable, in my opinion. Who directed it? I can't remember.
You don't know?
No.
It's Mr. Empire Strikes Back himself.
Oh, it's Irvin Kershner. Oh, it's Irvin Kershner. That's right. Okay.
You know, Eyes of Laura Mars, Irvin Kershner?
Yep.
Yeah. Everybody likes to say, you know, give Irvin Kershner a pat on the back for creating the best Star Wars movie. But you watch his other films, and you really get the sense that he was guided by the hand of George Lucas at every turn.
Absolutely he was, but he knew how to run a set, and could do that efficiently and competently, and that's pretty much all they needed, because the rest of the movie is dictated already. So let's get around to our topic.
Well, wait. Now again.
No. I realize we have a segue into our topic. So
Yeah. But this is very important.
Oh.
This is important because we're like, okay, well, we've been off for a couple of months. I had mentioned on the show, I don't know if you heard, the supposed last episode.
Yes.
But I had mentioned to people that, you know, your father was sick and you went and visited him, and how's he doing?
Well, I spent about 3 weeks there. He by some miracle, managed to pull through this. He was in the ICU for a week, and then basically bedridden with pneumonia at age 85, and, you know, that kind of thing that happens. But by some miracle, he pulled through, and he's still hanging out watching movies.
Excellent. Tell him to never say never again.
So that was part of our hiatus.
Yes. And while we were on hiatus, I polished off a little writing project that I'd been toying with for a while, and I worked on polishing it up, and decided that, I put the little story out there and I decided I'm going to go the self-publishing route just to experiment with that. And so a couple weeks ago, I published my first book. It's kind of like a young adult novel. Book, I guess. A novel. I don't know. A young adult book's like that. Is it considered a novel? I said it was a novel, but I don't know.
No, it's considered a novel.
Okay. So, hey, yeah. It's a novel. And it's called Parental Guidance Suggested. And, you know, it's loosely based on my experiences growing up in the late 80s in Massachusetts and working at the movie theater. It takes place all in one night, kind of my last night working at the movie theater and, you know, kind of crazy adventures and all sorts of other characters. But it's available on Amazon in Kindle form or paperback or hardcover. And you can just search Parental Guidance Suggested and type James Kent and you'd find it. So if you want to read up about my life in the late 80s.
Well, it's not just your life. You've created a story. There's characters. I've read it. I recommend people read it. What I was going to ask, though, is that if you were doing some comps for movies, what are some of the movies that, if this was made into a movie, what genre, what are some of the other movies that would be sort of in the subgenre with it?
Oh, well, I mean, I would put American Graffiti. I would put Dazed and Confused, certainly. And mm-hmm. Maybe Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Yeah.
Like those kind of teens. I mean, I purposely tried to write it in the spirit a little bit of like an 80s movie in a sense.
Yeah.
Those kind of stories, but also trying to examine it from the standpoint of today. And, you know, there's always that talk, right? Everybody's like nostalgic for the past or with all right. The stuff that, you know, about schools and how we should just let kids be the way they used to be. And I'm trying to make a subtle point that it was a horror show.
It was a horror show.
It was a horror yeah. show.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know if I would want to necessarily go back to the way things were in my high school. And, you know, then the whole book's not a horror story. But, you know, I try to include some things of how tough it can be. And there's a character in the story who's kind of recognizing her sexuality and that she may be gay, and that I grew up in a time where I don't think we're even allowed to think those thoughts.
Right. And I don't know. I thought about this with some of the movies we were watching for this week, just how there was some name calling that went on back in the day that would just be unacceptable now. And it was really casual, too. People would use slurs really casually, and you can't do that anymore.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing that I had to wrestle with the story. If I wanted to be a completely true to how the kids really spoke,
yeah.
It would be filled with those slurs.
Yes.
And I recognized that, today's kids' readers would be horrified reading that. So I had to pick a few select moments
so
that if you read the book, you'd get the understanding that that existed, but I didn't want that because some of these characters, if you heard them saying things, you would not root for them.
Exactly, yeah. Even though they're saying realistically, what they're saying is realistic to the time period and the location, but it would turn you against them.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, that show Deadwood?
Yes.
So when they first started doing that show, when they first started writing it, they wanted to go for period language. But the problem was that all the swears were things like Jumpin' Jehoshaphat. and so all the dialogue sounded like Yosemite Sam. And so they took out all of that and just put in F-words and stuff.
So they didn't swear like that then?
Not in that way, yeah. It's not period accurate.
Interesting. So my story, it's a fantastical tale. It's not, you know, it's not real, though there are some, I drew on some experiences and some real events, but I did want to try to make it feel realistic, as in I really didn't want to veer out of things that couldn't happen.
Right, yeah.
You know, I like to read a lot of biographies and things.
So there's no wizards?
Yeah, there's no wizards, zombies, or any of that stuff. You know, but there's things that, like, probably kids, I don't know, I haven't gotten reactions, and I don't know any kids that have read it yet, but, you know, there's a lot of smoking in the story. And I bet you that if I had gotten it published through like a publisher and stuff, I bet you those would have been conversations that they would have been like, you got to tone that stuff down.
But not as big as those conversations would be in a movie. Smoking in movies, I don't know if you've noticed, but it doesn't really happen anymore.
No, they'll do vaping. Kids are vapers. Yeah. But you know what? Kids, by and large today, kids don't smoke, but they vape a lot.
They do vape.
You know, so that's changed. But I mean, in my day, I mean, I think it's different. If you were in California, the teenagers didn't smoke as much, but they smoked a lot of pot. But, you know, where I was a working class suburb.
Yeah.
And it was still 88. I mean, you could still smoke in restaurants and stuff. And
I remember this is that I had friends, my parents didn't smoke, but I had friends whose parents smoked and they would like share cigarettes. Their parents would come home and be like, here's a pack of cigarettes.
You know, I remember this girl we knew in college. I'm not going to mention, you know, names. We were friends with her, and she actually lived somewhat near me back at home in Massachusetts. And I visited her over, like, a Christmas break. And this is when you and I were living together. And she invited me to, like, hang out and go to the movies in town and stuff. And she was a smoker. And I remember, you know, her parents, they're kind of like crazy Cambridge-y types. Mm-hmm. And they didn't smoke. Well, I guess the father like smoked a pipe or something, but like it was a different bag for them. They didn't care. Like they knew she smoked and she was allowed to smoke in the house.
Yes.
And it was as if it was no big deal. And so I remember it just so strange sitting there. Afterwards, we hung back at her house and we like rented a movie or something. Yeah. And I'm sitting on the couch with her and she's just, you know, hanging out smoking. And I just thought it was the weirdest thing hanging out, her smoking in her parents' living room.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, but yet I had a friend who was like, kind of like, I don't know, he was like a big musician-y kid. And he was like not really a character in my story, but I think I was inspired by kids like him because I got to know kids like him because of him. And he was a smoker, you know, like the Marlboro Reds.
Yeah.
And his parents are divorced. And he lived up in like this attic apartment like room and he was allowed to smoke in there. And like he always wanted to come over while he just played his guitar, which wasn't that interesting to everybody. Liked to have company. And he just would like smoke and smoke and you'd like walk out of there like that. You felt like you smoked a pack yourself.
Yeah.
But it was weird. Like his mom just let him smoke as long as he smoked in his room in the attic.
Okay.
Right. He couldn't smoke anywhere else in the house, but in the attic.
So teens used to like to smoke a lot.
They did. And it was weird is that I found in my class anyway, that girls specifically, not every girl, I mean, but I guess I was more interested as far as the characters they wrote. I was more interested in the girls that were like, you know, I mean, my characters are more of like either kind of the popular crowd or kind of like we call them the burnouts.
Right.
And they're just more interesting characters, I guess, to write about the kids. And so the kids I wrote about are kind of like the kids that were social and smoked or burnouts and smoked and...
Yeah, the burnouts are always, we're starting to get into our topic here. I don't know if you're ready to do this.
No, we're segueing in. It's a good little, I like how we transitioned in there.
Yeah, because it's something I've been thinking about in watching these movies is just how much smoking there is and how it's really not, it's not looked at the way it is now, where it's like, that's a bad thing for kids. I mean, sure, they're all underage and everything, but, you know, in a lot of these movies, there's a lot of drug use, there's a lot of smoking, and it's fairly casually done. It's not like, oh my God, they've got marijuana.
Yeah, those are things that I think are baked into the stories today. Like, if you were going to tell a story in the past, those things would have to be a big deal. Like, if there's a smoker today as a teen, it's like one character and there has to be all sorts of, you know, reasons or something. We're kind of talking about the theme today, now that we're into it. We always have that first 20 minutes where we talk about other shit and then we get into the theme.
Well, but your book it ties into the subject, so.
Teens in trouble. Now, my book's not, I wouldn't say necessarily teens in trouble.
No, but you know, there's various levels of trouble and sometimes it's just like teenage shenanigans, right? And sometimes the shenanigans, not necessarily in your book, but in some of these movies, they go too far. And so there's sort of a, you know, what kind of behavior is sort of over the line. and what is sort of still acceptable. But a lot of these movies, these teens in trouble movies, it's a very interesting genre and subgenre. And I've sort of been trying to wrap my head around it because it had a heyday. And I think it was in like the 70s, 80s, and 90s that was sort of the heyday of these teens in trouble movies. But there was also the Teens in Trouble After School Special.
Oh, yes, which I watched every one of those.
Yes, which was a huge thing. I remember one about like a kid taking PCP and jumping off a building or something, right? Those were always cautionary tales. If you smoke a joint, you're going to end up jumping off a building.
Dude, the one you're talking about,
yeah,
had such a profound influence on me. This is why I was like a nerd. So my character in the book, right? And that's the one that's probably the most based on me. And I don't have to tell you. If you read the book, you'll know which character is me.
Yeah.
I was like a nerd, and
so it actually had an impact on you.
Yes, I was the kid that they wanted to reach, and they reached.
So there was a real, like, youth in trouble thing, and I can't... The most recent movie that I think sort of fits into the genre at all is maybe Lady Bird.
Yeah, you know, you said that, like, I saw that we kind of, you know, off... We keep a list, and we, like... But I don't know if she's exploring, and she's coming of age, but I don't know if she's in trouble, right?
Yeah, she's not really. And so the last movie I could think of that really fits this genre is 13. And that was 20 years ago.
And that's a definite teen in trouble, right?
Oh, big time. Yeah. And it's a pretty great movie in some ways in that it really explores. Well, first of all, it's a girl corrupting another girl, which is interesting.
Directed by a woman, too.
Directed and co-written by a woman, yeah. But it also gets into the impact of her behavior on her mother's addiction issues, which is different than sort of the straight-laced parents, right? So it sort of raised the bar on that a little bit. But I can't think of really another movie since then that really fits into this subgenre. And... I would say it started kind of in the 70s.
Now, of course, right? This is what happens. You talk about something and then it brings it up. It's not entirely successful because it is so successful for a while and then it just kind of ends.
Mm-hmm.
And that's The Bling Ring, which I recently rewatched with my oldest son.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen it.
Well, I know a lot about the story. I watch these various documentaries and stuff.
Yeah, I know the story, yeah.
It's interesting. You should check that out.
Okay, I will definitely check that out. And that's, aren't they wealthier?
Yeah, but these are kids that are like, they may have wealthy parents, but they're not like celebrity wealth. And it's really kind of talks about, now I could go in a different rabbit hole. So when I was a freshman in college, I went to USC for a year. And there, all my roommates were local, or two of them were. They were both from the Valley. One was from, I don't know, remember where in the Valley. He was more like the Valley guy Valley.
Right.
My roommate, he was from, which now is super famous, like way more famous than it was in 1988, was Calabasas.
Oh, yeah.
And his parents moved to a different part of Calabasas in the second half of that year. But the first part of that year, he lived in Hidden Hills, which is this gated community, which is like super famous for all these celebrities now.
Right.
And I used to have to go there with him. We'd go on the weekends, hang out, see movies in the Valley, go to In-N-Out Burger, and then he'd drive me back to campus, and then he'd spend the rest of the weekend there. And I can see why, because he had this awesome house.
Right.
But when I got to campus, like the year before, Lesson Zero had come out, or maybe it was earlier that winter. Okay. I can't remember what year. And I recall watching it in the theater, then just like, it just didn't seem very realistic to me. And I hadn't read the book yet. And I read it when I first got to USC because I started meeting these kind of kids and I wanted to understand their world. And my roommate said to me, that movie is like a documentary. that's exactly what goes on at my school.
Wow. Okay. So yeah, and that's interesting because that's almost a separate subgenre, right? Like the wealthy kids gone bad, as opposed to like River's Edge, which is wrong side of the tracks kids.
Yeah. So you bring up River's Edge, and of course you know that I love teens in trouble genre yes. movies, and that is one of my absolute favorites.
Yeah. So I had not. This is crazy. I had not seen it since I saw it in the theater when it came out.
Wow. Oh, I've seen it so many times.
I had not seen it since then. It was burned into my memory. It's interesting because what year was that? 85?
87.
Oh, it was 87. Okay.
It was, I mean, it was, you know, you might see it listed as 86, but it came out in theaters in 87.
The older kids were kind of my sister's age.
Right. You were that little punk-ass kid, the younger kid.
I'm a little bit older than the punk-ass kid, but the main characters were more my sister's age than mine. And she and her friends were into this movie and pulled me along to see it. And it was her second or third time seeing it. But it really connected with her and her friends. She's just 2 years older than me, but there's something about those characters that was attractive to teenagers, right? There's something about the how high the stakes are in the movie. But also, you know, for me, it's Crispin Glover's performance is on a whole different level.
You know, it's funny, you watch movies that you watch a bunch of times, and then it's not like you, like sometimes it takes a while for it to click in and connect, yeah. but you get different reactions depending on you watch it. And when I watched it this time, because I've seen it many times by myself, yeah. watched it with my oldest, and I watched it with my wife. And we were like, I don't know, the Crispin Glover, I always know it's an insane performance, but we were just loving it. Like we were kind of talking out loud to the screen a little yeah. bit because his like totally wacky West Coast layback vibe acting voice or whatever. It's, I don't know, there's just, it's such an insanely great performance.
Well, you just can't take your eyes off it. And it's a really, it's a character that's got some really strange moral stances. But that performance makes him not into a villain, but into an individual who has these feelings. Right, as opposed to a stance or an idea in the little geography of this, the people who want to turn him in and the people who want to cover him up and stuff like that. And this character is so unique that it makes that moral question more interesting, I think.
I mean, I think the screenplay is great.
The screenplay, I was blown away. I mean, you know, I was not studying screenplays when I saw the movie 40 years ago or whatever it was, but I was blown away by how tight the script is. It's so well executed and there's so much tension and all the different elements come into play perfectly. And it's only like 95 minutes long.
Another thing too is when I first saw it, right? When events like that happen, you know, and you're younger, I don't know if you really spend much time noticing how much time this all takes place.
Yeah.
But when you rewatched, did you rewatch it?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So it takes place over only a couple of days.
Yes.
And so that actually, I think, makes it what happens in the screenplay even better because
yes.
it feels very realistic. And what I like is that I felt like the way that these kids reacted to the murder of their friend and going out there and yeah. not really, it seemed actually like how kids might actually handle seeing something so shocking that they can't process.
And that's what's really amazing is, you know, that scene when they all go out there to see the body and they're just kind of like, ugh. And then they just turn around and leave, right? But, and then when they're asked about it, there's a sequence where Keanu Reeves is being interviewed by the cop and they're like, the cop's saying, are you upset? Do you feel anything? And he's just saying, I don't know. And this idea that they just can't process it. They're not equipped for it to even really comprehend. And they have conversations about it where they're like, she was my friend. I should be sad, but I don't feel anything at all.
Yeah, and another thing that's interesting about the movie, we don't get to meet that character.
No, we only see her alive in a flashback where she's being killed.
we have to kind of wrestle with that, that these kids have lost somebody, but, you know, we don't know what their relationship was with her.
Exactly.
How it was. And, you know, we were talking about this earlier, but like those kids, like the girls in that Ione Skye and Roxanne, I can't remember her last name, but they were in a lot of 80s films at the time. Obviously, Ione Skye became a little bit more famous, but these actors, and including Keanu Reeves, they're all teenagers.
They're all teenagers.
Why do we relate to them when we're seeing it in the 80s is because we're actually seeing kids that look like our age instead of like 25.
And there weren't a lot of movies that sort of, I kept thinking about Massacre at Central High.
Another teen's in trouble.
But Massacre at Central High does something amazing, which is that there's no adults in the movie until the last scene. And so just having that idea in mind made me very aware of the role the adults were playing in these movies. And there are scenes with adults in River's Edge. There's scenes with parents. There's the cops. There's there's the boomer teacher that they're kind of making fun of.
That guy's hilarious.
The movie really focuses on the teenage characters, and the parents are supplementary. So it's not a movie that's made for adults worried about teens going off the rails.
I want to stop you there for a second. That's another thing I think is very successful about this film. And one of the things that with my book and story, the first chunk takes place during a school day.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second half is when all of these characters we've established, they go off into their various adventures. But the only adults in the whole book are the teachers.
Yeah.
In the first half. And I did this very purposely. You don't see anything to do with any parents at all.
Yeah.
And it's definitely changed a lot. I mean, I think of my kids, like we live in a rural area and the kids aren't off doing things all the time by themselves. But I mean, we didn't have cell phones. We weren't keeping track. Like when I was a senior, my parents were kind of like, it was like, yeah, great. You're on your own. Maybe we would leave like notes on the top of the stairs they would, you know, maybe we'd see them at dinner. But even then I was off maybe grabbing things. I mean, we had jobs and stuff. So honestly, I was running my own show.
Yeah, well, exactly. And that's what the better movies do that, I think, which show the kids basically leading their own lives. And the parents are some sort of present, but they're not the authority in the way that they might have been when the kid was 10. And so it leaves these movies to connect with a teen audience that's going through these things, as opposed to, I'm a parent and, oh no, look at my child's getting involved in drugs. These are like, I'm a kid who's involved in drugs. Look at my oppressive authoritarian parents.
Yeah, I mean, you get the two things. You either have parents that are too strict, so the kids are rebelling, or they're so out of touch, or they're just disconnected. They've got their own lives and they're not paying attention. And that's kind of the theme of, it's ironic that Tim Hunter is the director of River's Edge, and he went and has done tons of TV, did some Twin Peaks episode, and I understand why if you watch River's Edge, because it's got this sort of dark edge to it.
Yes.
But he wrote a screenplay for another teen movie that's also one of my favorites. And it got released like in a shopping mall theater, I think, as a part of a contract agreement. And then it didn't go anywhere. I don't know why. It should have been in the theaters.
I did a little research. It had a very brief theatrical run. There was some fear about how it would be interpreted.
Yeah, that's, you know, adult fear, yes.
And so I think that the distributor didn't really get behind it. And but it has, over time, picked up a huge cult following.
Well, so this is not a film that you were familiar with.
I was not familiar with it,
And of course, we haven't mentioned the film yet, but when I was... So this became, just like the kid jumping out the window at school on PCP, HBO, like, must have purchased it to show, would show this film, and it was probably like in the summertime when I'm home as a kid, Over the Edge, right? And Matt Dillon, of course, had already become a star by this point.
But this movie was before he was a star.
Yeah, he actually showed up for an audition with his friend. He was like a real punk, and they just liked his look and said, could you just audition? And he ended up getting the job. This was his first role.
Okay.
This film was written by Tim Hunter, and I was fortunate enough in 1990 when I first was at NYU, they had the Village Cinema there.
Yeah.
And I lived that year, my sophomore year, 89-90, I lived a street over. And they did a double feature. And I probably didn't know that they did it because of the Tim Hunter connection, but they showed Over the Edge and River's Edge.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it is a great double feature.
Anyways, I've come back to Over the Edge time and time again because I feel like when I watch this film, it has the look and feel of those kids that were several years older than I when I was 9 in 1979. Yeah. That's what those kids looked like.
Absolutely. That is exactly what those kids looked like. I don't know how this movie escaped me. I was aware of the title and that it had Matt Dillon, but that was about all I knew about it. And so I just didn't even bother with it until you started really promoting it. And it's just a fascinating piece of work. I know Jonathan Kaplan went on to make some mediocre studio fare, but... But I was really impressed with the direction in this film for one particular reason is that I don't know how they shot it, but scene after scene, he doesn't use close-ups. He just uses the master. And so you just have these four or five kids just in the frame for 2 or 3 minutes having a conversation. There's the scene where they're shooting the gun.
I love that scene.
Yeah, and it's just a shot of them standing there, and there's not a lot of editing. It really lets the actors and the characters have all this room in the frame and in the editing. And so the actors and the performance, so it really starts to become almost anthropological. Like we're just seeing these kids in almost a documentary sense, as opposed to a film that's really trying to make a specific point in a scene. It's allowing the scenes to play. And it ends up having such a relaxed, approach to these characters and lets them exist without the judgment of the filmmaker.
There's also the music in it. It's very creepy.
Yes, the music is very creepy. And you know, one thing I liked about this movie is how casual the drug use was.
Yes.
And because so often in like the after school specials, it's like the really bad kid. And it's like, obviously the bad kid is like trying to give you drugs, right? But here it's just like, I don't know, this kid's like, I'll take some acid before science class or...
Well, and then they're watching that nature show and he's freaking out.
He's freaking out. And, you know, or they're smoking pot or whatever, you know, they're drinking, whatever it is, they're not making a huge deal out of it. It's just part of their culture.
Now, but I want to remind you, this is what's interesting about seeing a film like that today. People have to be reminded, or if a kid watches, it may have that appearance where it doesn't seem that big a deal, but
yeah.
They weren't making it a big deal and a big plot point. However, this is at a time where that kind of behavior get caught, like it could have serious consequences. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, you're like worried about kids doing it or whatever, but like, it's not like, oh my God, they're going to get, you know, in jail and there's like, right, you know, all that right. stuff. But even when I went to school in the 80s, I mean, there was like a kids that were, we called them the burnouts, that were probably smoking a lot of pot. But pot had sort of like a darker connotation.
Oh, much darker. Well, I mean, it's basically legal now, right?
Yeah.
So at the time, though, yeah, if you got arrested, I mean, there's that scene where the cops come in and bust up the rec center and they catch the kid with hash. And it's like, oh, that kid is screwed.
Right.
And then, you know, what's interesting is there's this whole sort of message in the movie about capitalism, because they have this housing development that's kind of failing and they're trying to bring in investors, but the kids are scaring away the investors. And there's this great line where one of the investors says to the housing community guys, he says, "You folks were in such a hurry to get away from the city that you turned your kids into what you were afraid of."
Yes. It's this whole idea that you want to get away from like all those things you consider the problems. You ignore your kids and you give them nothing to do.
Nothing to do.
That's the whole point of this kids doing drugs and acting out, is because they are so bored.
They're so bored and they're not given any attention. There's no, the one thing they have is this rec center.
I love that thing too.
Yeah, I love that thing. But that gets taken away from them. And they're pissed off. And they escalate their vandalism to basically to riot proportions. But it's such an incredible scene because they and nobody gets hurt, right? But they destroy a lot of property. It's interesting because the movie has sort of been hands off with them up until that point. And it's a question of whether the movie is endorsing this behavior. And I feel that the movie does endorse it, especially since the end has our main characters being carted off to juvie and the other teens cheering for them as they're in the bus to juvie. There's something in the movie that feels these kids were justified in their actions. It's not just, if you do this, you'll go to juvie, right? It's not just a cautionary tale. There's another element to it, too, which is, given the environment that's been set up for these kids, this was inevitable.
Exactly, right. Well, it was like a do-the-right-thing moment.
Yeah, exactly.
For white kids. Where like it's a powder keg ready to go off, and then an event happens, and it's actually not unlike what happens in Do the Right Thing. This is like 10 years earlier, that sets these kids off.
And the film does not judge them harshly for it. It does not portray them as villains.
No, the parents are more the villains.
The parents are more the villains, and that's pretty brave for a movie to do. I mean, even today, it's like we just don't see these movies about the what were you calling them? The druggies?
The burnouts?
The burnouts, the druggies, the heads. We call them heads sometimes.
Even though I wasn't writing about specific kids, like they weren't friends of mine, I had sort of an affection for these burnout kids.
Yeah.
And that's why a chunk of the story involves those kids, because I think a lot of them didn't have the greatest home lives. And
They didn't.
And their parents really weren't around. And I think about this now. Like I was imagining when I was writing the story about what some of these kids' backstories were. And, you forget a lot of these kids had parents who's like the fathers went to Vietnam.
Some of them didn't just gonna say that.
Come back, and some of them didn't come back right.
I had so many friends whose parents did not come back, or fathers did not come back right. Yeah.
And if you had older parents, you might have a father that came back from Korea. And so, and a lot of these kids, it was a big Irish Catholic town that I grew up in. It's much more diverse today, by the way, than it was, 40 years ago. But a lot of these kids were like the last kid in their family of like five or six.
Right.
Yeah. And by the time the parents got to them, they're just so old to kind of like, I can't do it anymore.
Right. They're just not interested in parenting.
And that's why they just let them do what they want. So, there is, in my little simple story, there is a lot of back thought that went into these characters and what was going on and why it is that they might be just out doing whatever.
And they are just out doing whatever. That's the thing, is that there's always a lack of supervision in these movies. And it's sort of, we talked about like what you were just saying, that the youngest kid or even just the high school senior is sort of off doing their own thing. And so it's this, they're starting to deal with adult things, but without necessarily the emotional or cognitive resources to deal with them.
The time that these movies were made, there was still a generation that a lot of them hadn't gone to college, and maybe their kid isn't going to go to college, or maybe it's the first kid going to college. So what they thought of is, well, you're 17 or 18, you're practically an adult and out of the house, so what am I supposed to say to you?
Yeah. And you see that in River's Edge with the way the Keanu Reeves character deals with him differently versus his younger brother.
If you haven't seen River's Edge, this, Keanu Reeves has a mom. She's got a boyfriend. It seems to be a guy who lives there, and they hate him. And now we can't stop saying this. It's my favorite part of the whole movie.
Food eater.
First, he says, the guy gets up to yell at Keanu Reeves, and he goes, it moves. And then he goes, food eater. Like food, that's eater. His insult. It's the greatest insult everywhere, because it just basically says, that's what you do. You just come in and you eat our food, you're freeloading, dude. And Keanu Reeves is absolutely so amazing in this movie, only because I don't think he knew any better. He didn't know how to act, so he just acted himself, and he's amazing.
He's so good. And I, watching his performance, I was realizing, not that much longer after that, he did Bill and Ted. And his performance in that sort of took over his personality.
For a lot of years, yeah.
For a lot of years, yeah, and sort of pigeonholed him. But in this, you see that he's not that Bill and Ted character. I can't remember if he's Bill or Ted, but...
Again, this is what great chemistry, magic, and great direction is. You really feel that connection in the way, like, Keanu Reeves and Ione Skye look at each yes. other. Like, you buy that they want to get together, and it's done yeah. in a really, I think, a great way. That scene where they go out and they go out to the park and
they go out to the park, yeah, and they hear the gunshots.
That movie is so great. And of course, now we've only talked about two movies. I don't know, you said you might have questions for me, so maybe we should see what other questions
we've sort of gotten to a lot of my questions. Oh, okay. Actually, yeah, because I, you know, my big question is just, so you know, I think, why was it that there was this period in time where we had all these movies, and why don't we have them now? This is not a recent movie, but Kids,
you know, that's a big thing in the 90s.
Yeah.
And I swear to God, I might have actually run across a couple of them since he got, like, actual kids that would hang out there. So I saw that, you know, 95, and was shocking. But, you know, a couple of my visits in the couple of years before in New York City, you walk through Washington Square Park, and there were these really, like, kids you didn't want to mess with, these young kids on yeah. skateboards, and they're hanging out, but they were, like, aggressive and a little bit, like, you know, maybe on shit, and yeah. you didn't want to mess with them. And there's a scene in Kids where they're like in Washington Square Park doing yeah. that, and I'm like, I fucking think those are the same kids.
Yeah, Kids was hugely controversial. It's interesting looking at it now.
Did you rewatch it?
Yeah, it's such a completely different era. I have issues with the screenplay. Basically, I think the story is too overblown. Whereas I think it would have been more interesting if it had a plot like Dazed and Confused, where it's a looser structure, but the whole, like, we have to stop him because he's HIV positive is, you know, is a little too thrillery for me.
Hmm.
And yeah, it just makes it feels a little contrived. And so the movie actually, in rewatching it, made me feel a little, it felt a little contrived to me. It felt like it was trying to push buttons. Whereas Over the Edge, I felt like was a really, wasn't trying to shock the audience.
Now, did you see Bully?
Yes.
Isn't that the same guy, right?
Same director, right. Yeah.
I thought Bully's got a little bit more of a plot.
It has more of a plot. It's a little bit more of a thriller. But the story lends itself to that, because it has conflict right from the beginning, right? Whereas I feel like Kids could have been more of a hangout movie.
But it's interesting, if I look back now, Bully is only like 6 years after Kids.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen it since it first came out. But
yeah, it's good. It doesn't totally fit in this genre.
Okay. Well, what other films you think slot in there?
Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, you know, and here's the weird thing. He was older cast, so I never looked at them as teenagers. He was older cast.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't look like a teenager to me.
Yeah.
And so I think that idea was lost on me, and I think, even though it's like, it's a masterpiece on its own right, what would be interesting is if that was, like, you know, ever redone, but you had kids that actually looked, that were that age.
Yeah, because he's supposed to be 15.
Yeah. Well, in the book, I mean, I don't know how old, you know, maybe we'll move him up to 17 here, but he still doesn't look 17.
No, he looks like a grown man, yeah. But it does fit into sort of this societal fear of we're losing our teens.
Yes.
Right? And I feel like that's in a lot of these movies. That's in River's Edge. That's in Over the Edge.
Over the Edge, yeah. Well, that's even like, I mean, if we go back to like Rebel Without a Cause, right?
Yeah, so, okay, here's a little Rebel Without a Cause thing.
Great.
In Over the Edge, Matt Dillon is shot because he's waving a gun at the cops.
Yeah.
This happens in Rebel Without a Cause, too.
Right, to Salminio.
To Salminio, and so I was wondering if Over the Edge was a little bit of a an homage to that in a way.
I think so, because the kids rebelling against parents who are out of touch.
Yeah, and just that scene in Over the Edge, the fact that there's no bullets in the gun showed it's just such a great metaphor, which is he appears violent, but he's actually harmless.
Right.
And the cop is the adult authority figure in this who reacts with violence to something that's actually not a threat. And I thought that just the dynamic of that shooting sort of encapsulates so many of the themes that we're talking about here.
I agree.
And so, yeah, it's funny that Rebel Without a Cause has a similar beat in it.
Well, I think that kicked off, like, with drive-ins being popular in the 60s, there were lots of those teenage rebel movies. And of course, I think that's like, even though we're doing Teens in Trouble, we'd have to do a deep dive and come up with a list and actually do a specific theme on the 60s teen rebels.
Yeah, because it is. Yeah, and I was even thinking about like the Brando movie, Wild One, right? Yeah, it's interesting. Like Ione Skye, I thought, what, you know, she kind of had a moment there, and I wonder what's happened to her. And I looked her up, and she has been working steadily for the last 40 years, basically. And I, going through her filmography, I realized, oh, she works exactly enough to maintain her health insurance through the union.
That's what a lot of people do.
Yeah. So, yeah, because she's got a credit like every 18 months.
Yep. The last movie I remember her in where, like, she stuck out at me, and maybe it's the last time I saw her in anything, but she was in Zodiac.
Oh, yes, she was in Zodiac, yeah. Look her up, though, because you'll see that, like, she's had little parts on TV, you know, guest spots on TV shows. You may have seen her around in some small part, because she's just been basically doing character work, it looks like.
I mean, I remember from River's Edge, but where I really noticed her is...
Rachel Papers?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Oh, I had like a major key. Yeah. That's another theme of another show we're thinking of doing is our on-screen crushes. But I had a massive crush on her from that movie.
Yeah. So, I had a massive crush on her from that movie. And then Gas, Food, Lodging.
That's right. Gas, Food, and Lodging. Yep.
Yeah. She definitely had a moment, but she's kept working. So, you know, some of those people, like the kid in River's Edge, he hasn't worked a lot.
Well, he's done other things, I guess.
Oh, he has? Okay.
He's like production stuff.
Oh, okay. So he's in this movie from 2007 called Wizard of Gore.
Yes.
Which is an homage to Herschel Gordon Lewis.
That's correct.
And it stars, do you know who stars?
Well, no.
Crispin Glover.
Oh.
So, yeah. So those two made it together in a movie again, you know, 20 years later.
Well, you know, here's a little funny Crispin Glover story. One, when I was working at the movie theater, we would, like in the summer, we would play softball.
Yeah.
And because of, I think, River's Edge, and I don't know, you know, when one kid says something, then it just sticks. Yeah. I don't think I ever really looked like Crispin Glover, but they thought I looked like Crispin Glover from Back to the Future. So they used to call me George McFly sometimes. And when River's Edge came out, right, it made such an impact that I never used to watch David Letterman. I knew who he was.
I know where you're headed with this. Yeah.
But I was like, oh, well, geez, I kind of interested because this movie, River's Edge, is so cool. He's going to be on Letterman. I'm going to watch his Letterman. So the very first time I watched David Letterman show is that infamous time when he came on. That's the first episode I choose to watch.
That is hilarious.
And after I watched this thing, I was hooked. I watched Letterman all the time after that because I was like, this is insane.
Yeah.
And then I was like, and that kind of, I think, really ruined Crispin Glover's career.
I think that plus the whole Back to the Future thing.
Yeah, but that wasn't his fault. I mean, they didn't want to pay him, and he deserved to get paid, and so he sued them, rightfully so.
Well, no, I agree, but anytime you get into any kind of legal kerfluffle with the studios, it does not help your career.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, unfortunately, the blacklists, you know, are real.
Yeah, like we found out with Linda Fiorentino recently.
Yeah, see, now we're already getting into our next show.
Okay, well, let's...
Oh, well,
let's
that's not Teens there. In Trouble, but it's interesting is that I recently watched Vision Quest and watched it with my son, and it is the ultimate 80s movie, like white boy fantasy adventure. Yeah. There's still something compelling about that film, though it is very dated and not necessarily in the right places.
So are there any other titles you want to throw out for this Teens in Trouble thing?
Deal of the Century.
What?
Well, it's just happened to be on Criterion because they're spotlighting William Friedkin. And I have a weird affection for that movie.
I do too. I love that movie.
It's so flawed, right? But there's makings of genius in it. And I just rewatched it. And being an adult and seeing where we've gone as a society militaristically and seeing where drones have come in.
Yeah.
And this is the first movie that's ever talking about drones. And because of what it inadvertently predicted about the Reagan administration and what it was doing with the Contras, but it couldn't have known that, but it's so brilliant. And the dialogue, I just think William Friedkin was the wrong person to direct it because—
Yes, that's what went wrong.
Paul Brickman
wrote it.
He was supposed to direct it, but he was caught up in reshoots for Risky Business.
It has one of my all-time favorite scenes in movie in cinema history.
It's got a few amazing scenes, but it's got one of my, and I don't know if ours link up, so you tell me yours and I'll tell you if it's my favorite.
Mine is the one with Wally Shawn.
That is a great scene, and then my favorite is the touch-up.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And it's funny, when I saw the film in the theater, my mom and I went and saw it. It was playing in second run like within 2 weeks because it bombed. And we watched it, and I couldn't understand all the, you know, the subtext of the film at 13 years old. But the Wally Shawn part, which is amazing, and then him getting his foot shot after it had been shot.
Yes.
And then the part where his partner goes out to his car, and it gets hit, and then the couple starts screaming at him, and he loses it, and he brings out the blowtorch. But I watched this time and saw all the reasons why it was not a good movie.
Yeah.
Like Chevy Chase, his delivery wasn't right.
I blame Friedkin for that.
I would say so. And Sigourney Weaver was miscast.
Yeah.
And they didn't really write her character well. It feels like there's missing parts of the movie.
Yes. It feels like it got chopped up a little bit during production and in editing, probably.
The military sales satire aspect of the film
is fantastic.
It's fantastic. So it's on Criterion now, and I just rewatched it, and I kind of enjoyed it.
Okay, so that not a Teens in Trouble movie, but maybe worth checking out anyway.
No, but maybe Kit Teen saw that on cable, and it led to trouble later in the 80s. I don't know.
Yeah, so how come, you know, there's this character in Over the Edge, there's the in the classroom when the teacher is like, ah, yeah, we were out on the picket line busting cops, and there's this kid who's like, well, that is bad for society and violence is wrong.
that nerdy kid.
Well, how come there's not movies about how that kid is in trouble because he grows up to be an arms dealer? Right? Like that kid's going down the wrong path.
Well, you know, speaking of, you know, that and Teens in Trouble in the 80s, I recently rewatched with my youngest. I don't think he saw the whole thing ever, so we watched it. And, you know, my take on it now isn't really anything new because a lot of people have already made this comment. Yeah. But Back to the Future, the first one.
Yes.
And, you know, it is really so funny that intentionally or unintentionally, like the ending of the movie is basically the perfect embodiment of Reaganism.
It absolutely is. It is total Reaganism at the end. It's a right-wing movie.
Yeah. And again, I don't know if that was the intention.
I don't know, but it really ruins the movie for me now.
Well, I think that it just shows you how, like, that American dream, which we now look at that as a sort of a very right-wing mindset, it was pervasive in the 80s.
It was, yeah.
It was sort of showing, look at how great things turned out for Marty by him going back to the past.
Yeah, look how great it is now that they're capitalists.
Of course, it doesn't address the fact that his brother and sister are now so successful, but they're still so successful that they're living at the house.
Yes.
That little house. It doesn't, you know.
So, yeah, that definitely... I mean, the 80s has a whole bunch of that kind of stuff where it just, you look back at them and, you know, I feel like even by the 90s, some of those films were inappropriate.
No, absolutely. I mean, we could spend the next season on just the 80s.
We could, but I don't. So films from 15 years ago, say from the 2000s, they don't have the same level of inappropriateness.
Well, I mean, things have changed, right? And, you know, yeah. I mean, the way the studio system now, which controlled by mega corporations, and there's nothing is, everything has to be very safe. You don't get a lot of...
everything has, yeah.
You know what movie I would say doesn't play it safe? And we talked about it already. We did a whole episode, but again, and it shows you because it's the director who did Dazed and Confused, is Boyhood.
Yeah, no, Linklater doesn't play it safe. Well, I mean, sometimes maybe he does. He has a pretty diverse filmography, but yeah, Boyhood doesn't play it safe, and that could almost fit into this genre.
Yeah, I mean, there's troubled moments, but they're like little splinters and different scenes. But I mean, it shows more like the journey of what kids go through. And again, another white boy journey, which is, I think, a lot of these teens in trouble heavily focus on a male.
Well, there's a whole sort of separate subgenre, which is the black kids in gangs getting caught up in gangs, teens in trouble kind of stories.
Well, like Boys in the Hood.
Yeah.
Or Menace to Society.
Menace to Society, George Washington. There were a whole bunch in the 90s. Fresh. Sort of about kids and gangs and growing up into that culture. And yeah, that's, but largely this sort of teens in trouble is a white genre. It's because it's the concerns of suburban parents that are sort of being exploited in those films.
Yeah. So now the next crop that'll come out will be the gung-ho right-wing parents worried about their kids getting poisoned by those woke teachers and their critical race theory. And
that's what's hilarious about
transgender bathrooms.
That's what's hilarious about the boomer teacher in Over the Edge, who's just always talking about how, or is that in River's Edge?
River's Edge, yes.
Yeah.
But they always have, like, so these movies do tend to have, instead of a parent, the surrogate, or the one that's trying to reach kids is a teacher, usually.
Is a teacher, yeah. But yeah, I almost thought they were making fun of that guy, because he's now, I don't know at the time, but he's now such a cliche.
Yeah.
Right? Of like, we stopped a war, man.
Yeah, now this is the same guy that if we went back to visit this teacher, he'd be like, the kids, they're learning that racism is bad.
Yeah, exactly.
that they're going to find out that slavery, this is like the nonsense that's going on today. It's like, you know what? Why don't you parents just let the teachers teach the kids, and you should hope that your kids are going to be better than you. That's what it used to be, right?
Like, yeah. See,
we used to have parents that might not have been that bright or smart, and they knew that. They knew they were just blue-collar people or whatever, and they were just happy that...
They had respect for the teachers.
Yeah, they wanted their kids to learn more than them
and
be more educated and be thinking different. And now parents are afraid that their, like, nonsense is going to die out with them, so they're going to try to get it baked into their kids' heads.
Yeah.
So I think there could be a new story that could develop out there, you know?
Well, hopefully we'll see more of this genre. I'm going to have my eye out for it now. If movies show up, I will definitely mention them.
Yeah, we got to, like, you know, battle the school board.
Exactly, yes. Why? Where's our Norma Ray for the school board?
Yes.
Okay, so we should probably wrap this up, huh?
We're going to wrap it up. This is, you know, again, I don't know. We never know what the episode's going to end up turning out into. And again, sorry, I've got a cold, but it was sort of like, well, we knew we were going to come back.
Yes.
And I didn't want to cancel already on the first episode back. And which, by the way, I don't think I finished that thought. The thought was is that I thought we were out. And you, of all people, you're kind of like, how could I convince you that we should do this show again?
Yeah, I love doing the show.
I was giving you the perfect out.
I don't want an out. So never say cancel the show again.
Never say never again with the show. Cancel it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't believe me. If I come on the mic again and say the show is over, just go, yeah, they'll be back.
Yep. Another hiatus.
But I really thought, well, I thought we had over five. I'm like, all right, that's a good run.
But you also keep thinking we're going to run out of material, and I keep coming up with new stuff.
Well, it is hard. Well, because you don't watch anything. Like all the movies, like that was like the end of the year. Like you didn't, we were going to do a top 10 list and then you didn't watch any of the movies. And I was like, this is never going to happen. So I like told my top 10 and I'm like, I don't think you still see some of those movies.
I am making my way through them, but I did take some time off the last 2 weeks to watch some Teens in Trouble movies.
Okay, I understand. Did you ever see Poor Things?
No.
See? I don't understand how you could not see that movie.
Man, it's one of those, I'm in this thing now where I was all set to watch it.
Right.
And then the rest of the family is like, we want to see it too. Can you wait for us? Yeah, that's probably what's going to end up happening.
Now as a family, we're kind of getting that there too, where if there's something that I'm sort of interested in, but my wife's desperate to watch, I'm kind of like, well, you know what? If it's really that great, sure, I could get into it. But otherwise, go ahead. Go watch it.
I did watch a few movies with my kids recently. My eldest daughter really wanted to see Killers of the Flower Moon.
And did she like it?
She loved it. So I watched that a second time. I watched Fury Road again with my 11-year-old. She really wanted to see that.
We're getting all prepped for the next one coming up.
Well, I showed her the trailer for Furiosa, and she's like, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
We gotta see. So we watched Fury Road, and she loved it. It's really, she's a little squeamish with blood, and there really is very little blood in that movie.
It's all car crashes.
And when there is blood, it's kind of appropriately shocking when they, like, rip Immortan Joe's mask off, right?
Yeah.
So it's appropriate, but it was interesting, like, how little gore there is in that movie.
Just full-octane action.
Just full-octane action, yep. It just blows you through the back wall of the theater.
Well, we could stay on forever.
We'll be back in a couple weeks with some other rabbit hole.
Yep. I'm now looking to see what you, Teal, are going to tell me we're doing next.
Oh, you'll find out later today.
Okay, great. And, meanwhile, again, the book is called Parental Guidance Suggested, a Wicked Awesome Tale of High School in the Late 80s. That's totally not rated PG. That's the full title.
That's the full title.
Yeah. It's by yours truly, James Kent, and... you can get it, and I am going to work on an audiobook version of it when my voice gets better.
Cool. Yeah.
But I found out that I did a test run a little bit, and I have to wait till days where my wife is actually working from home, and the weather gets warm enough that I can move stuff downstairs in the basement.
Oh.
Because, like, I had birds chirping outside, and my dog was snoring. And
you can't have that.
It'll be a few more weeks, but I'm working on that too.
Excellent.
All right, you got any plugs?
No, just keep listening to stuff we've seen and keep watching movies.
Yeah, tell people that all your friends and neighbors that are like, oh, the show's no more. Tell them we're back.
Tell them we're back.
Yeah, that's right. I had to reach out on Instagram recently from our listener, John Ford, and he's just like, oh, I'm so sorry that you guys are gone. I just finally caught back up on some episodes, and I was just, oh, but I'm like, it was a good run and everything. And I'm like, put a pin in that, buddy. A couple of weeks.
We're back. That's good. We did all this so that John could catch up on some back episodes.
Yeah.
So it was really a favor to him. Give him some time to catch up. And now we're back on the air, baby.
Yeah. So, John, if you want to understand what teenagers were like in the 80s, you can watch Over the Edge. And you can watch River's Edge, where you got teens murdering kids and then taking their friends out to the woods to see it. You can read Parental Guidance Suggested and then be really scared. That's the show.
Okay, cool. Thanks, people. Thanks for listening.
All right. Go see some stuff. Bye.
Bye-bye.